Hello, welcome to the big show. Yes, we're here to discuss the week in technology. It is Thanksgiving, hence the absence of Yanks from the panel. Doc's only here because the turkey's not done yet. All the people whose turkeys are done have cooked their goose, and they're not here. That's Kelly and
Don't
Jeff.
Don't eat turkey.
You don't eat turkey. What are you having then?
Everything but. I despise turkey. No, actually, I'm like hypersensitive to gouty things, and everyone blames on the shrimp and crab, but turkey is actually...
You're hypersensitive to gouty things. What's a gouty thing?
Things with high purine in it, things that cause gout.
Right.
If you haven't had about a gout, then you're lucky, because if you ever get it, you'll be like, holy crap, I wish I never had
So you've had gout. Do you drink port or something then, Doc?
Not anymore.
Port and lemon, is that your favorite drink?
No. But it came from, I guess, when I was growing up, my favorite food in the world was shrimp and crab. And I lived near the ocean, so I ate a lot of it. And now I can't eat it at all.
So what's about a gout like then?
Someone taking about a couple million needles and sticking it in your skin from the inside out.
Oh. Well, wouldn't that give you better grip?
No, it's super painful. You can't walk or you can't step on anything. You can barely, your clothes hurt touching your leg because it feels like the needle's trying to push its way from the inside of your skin up. Like, it's just super, super painful.
Okay, cool. I learned something today then.
Yeah, so don't eat turkey.
Shrimp and Maryland crab with Old Bay FTW, says Bronwyn. What's
exactly,
that about?
Exactly, that's where it came from. Smart kid.
What? No, explain that. I don't understand that without saying the FDW bit.
Oh, okay. So where I grew up, right, you could just literally go across the street and then throw a crab basket into the water, and within no time, Maryland crabs would climb in because there's so many of them. As a matter of fact, it's like the state animal. So
right. You
get like about a dozen of these guys, and you take a double boiler. In the bottom part, you fill it up with one part water, one part beer, and about 90 parts of Old Bay seasoning, which is this special blend that East Coasters all know about. It comes from Maryland. And then once it runs the boil, you put the top pot on, you throw the crabs in, and those guys scream and yell a little bit. But then literally about 2 minutes later, you got like the perfect steamed crab and all of that Old Bay flavor is all up in there. You take some of that, you mix ketchup and mayonnaise and another sprinkle of Old Bay seasoning with some hot sauce, and you just go to town on crabs. And like literally, it's such an easy thing to make that we made it a lot. And another thing is, as poor people, if you didn't have any money for dinner, you really could just go across the street and throw a basket in the water for like 20 minutes and come out with dinner for the whole family, because the crabs are that many. Now, I'm sure the population has dwindled, but, you know, as a kid growing up in the 70s, it was really easy to go across the street and get some crabs and possibly a catfish and just steam them up, go straight to town.
Dude,
this is in the city, not even in country. You figure this is what country folks do? But this is literally in the city because there's that many crabs in Maryland.
Dude, I don't mean to be disrespectful or anything, but for a minute there, you just sounded like Bubba out of Forrest Gump.
Exactly. That part of the movie was so
fried
funny.
Fried shrimp. We did it. It's grilled shrimp and boiled shrimp and barbecue shrimp. And... Dude, that was,
oh my God.
That was impressive. Your knowledge of shrimp, considering you don't eat it, is impressive.
Well, I used to. I think that's why I can't eat it now, is because as a kid, he ate a lot. Also, we have a wharf here, which I'm sure you have a lot of places. I'm trying to find you a decent picture of it. And it's called Captain's Wharf. And as a kid, you can go across the street and just buy like a couple crabs for a dollar or something from the boat that's floating right there on the side.
Crab is famous in the state of Maryland where I live, says Bronwyn. So we're a bit close to her location.
That's where I was at.
Old Bay is the seasoning on crabs, and she sent me a link to Blue Crab. Are they the ones that are like, they look like they're out of the Alien movie?
Yeah, kind of.
So we've got a Sea World in Birmingham, and there's some crab in there, and they look, I mean, they look like the tentacle thing out of Alien, and they are 4 foot across with the legs. They are massive. They are
so huge. I was in a place called Silver Springs. Which is right on the D.C. line, and the Rock Creek Park, you can just go down and hit the water and snag them right out. Go for it. Chesapeake Bay is the most famous place to get them. Go to Chesapeake Bay almost every weekend.
That's where Hannibal's set, isn't it? Chesapeake Ripper?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there we go. So anyway, we're here to discuss tech. I've got Doc, I've got Chris, and I've got Wrighty with me. There's no point in doing introductions. We've already started. On shrimp.
Barbie.
Are you boys all right?
Yeah, really good.
Yeah. All right. Thanks to Chris for stepping in at the last minute as super sub to sub for Lee Peterson, who's had to step out at the last minute. And when I say last minute, I mean like 4 hours ago, as opposed to Kelly, who stepped out with 4 minutes to showtime, and Jeff, who stepped out T-minus 10. So anyway, we're here. Righty boy, you're looking lustrous, mate, but you haven't put the light up. Where's the light?
It's here. It's right here. And no, it's my fault because it's electricity and I'm an idiot. So I took your advice and then I took someone else's advice.
Good man.
Going to get a second opinion from a doctor. And it's going up tomorrow.
I've got an electrician called Roy Robinson who comes and does all my electrics. And someone said to me once, so what is perfect electrical safety? And I said, hello, Roy, it's Ewan.
Oh, so wait a minute. You've got a bloke who comes and does your electrics. Oh. But then the other week, you were telling me how to do my electrics.
No, I'm okay. Actually, I mean, Muller was here on Friday when I wired up. I've got two lights here in front of me. Hang on. Here we go. Hang on. I've put a new camera up. Here we go. There we go. Studio wide view. I breathe in when that one's on, though. And just here, look, you see a light. And I wired that myself. So there you go.
Breathe in
and
again.
I did all the calculations and stuff, and it's okay. Are you all right, Chris?
Yeah, really good.
Busy week.
I thought you said you were going to breathe in just then.
I've got to breathe in on studio cam.
really busy week, but good week, and we're nearly at Friday, a long weekend for me, so I'm happy with that.
And Doc is now roasting, I don't think we ever got to the end of that, for what? For Thanksgiving.
Me?
What are you and Karen doing for Thanksgiving?
Going to the in-laws and just eating.
Is there any football on today?
Oh, always.
Yeah, so it's like 12 hours of football, isn't there, something?
Yeah, football's in like parades and Mythbusters marathon.
Oh, right, okay. Mythbusters marathon.
Yeah.
I watched an episode of Mythbusters the other night, and it was like throwing where the girls versus boys.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was really quite interesting because it was like they said, oh, girls only throw to an angle of 40 degrees, whereas men throw to an angle of 60 degrees of their body inclination. I thought that was great, but the thing that struck me was you've only picked guys that throw like girls. And that may be politically incorrect to say that, but they picked guys that threw like girls. They didn't pick guys that threw
guys. They had one professional pitcher on there from girls and one professional pitcher from boys.
Yeah, exactly. And they both pitched. And actually, it was quite interesting that she didn't go as far over as the professional pitcher did, the male professional pitcher. So the female professional pitcher was much more upright than the male professional pitcher was, which was, I thought was quite interesting. But nothing to do with it, but there you go. The week in tech, what's been going on? I want to start off tonight, actually. I rarely bring a story because we've usually got a full panel, but I want to bring the story that starts us off tonight. And I want you to talk me off the ledge to a certain degree. Because I was really close this afternoon to deleting my Twitter account.
Really?
Do you know what? I've had enough. I can't do it anymore. Cannot do it anymore. And I'm going to cut to Doc here. And I'm going to ask you, what is Thanksgiving? Explain Thanksgiving to me.
The commercial answer or the BS?
No. The what is Thanksgiving? Just give me the humanitarian, decent person, not looking to day before Black Friday answer.
Well, in theory, it's our day, you know, to give thanks. It's kind of celebrating the United States and America. I mean, in America and the U.S. I hate when people say America like we're the only one. Sort of just like our coming of age celebration for our sort of independence and our roof. And we were thankful to be able to have, you know, this country that is now ours, free from the other side of the planet, and it's kind of silly.
No, it's got nothing to do with freedom from us.
No, I know, but I'm saying that's what people hear. I mean, there is no clinical definition. It was literally a made-up holiday. But if this is what people think it is, because this is what they taught us, right? But it's supposed to be thankful for the harvest that you had, really. That's sort of what it's supposed to be. And then, so then somebody injected this stupid story about the Plymouth Rock and the the pilgrims, and none of that shit has been able to be proven. So it's like the modern me knows different from the rest of me, but it was about Puritans and the English Reformation in the beginning.
Right. Okay. So if I said that Thanksgiving is effectively what we would call in the UK Harvest Festival,
yeah.
Would that be wrong?
No. In theory, yes.
In theory, it's wrong.
No, in theory, it's right.
Yeah. So basically, the first harvest, the first Thanksgiving was supposedly, and there's a lot of people say that this is BS because it's like a rose tinted spectacles on the actual truth. But there was like the Plymouth brethren who originally landed on in the US on Plymouth Rock, and the local Indians, when they were at a period of peace, it has to be said, sat down and gave thanks for the fact that they got an abundance of harvest, come livestock, come things to live off. Yeah,
right.
Is that fair?
That is absolutely fair.
Yeah, and the fact that there was a complete genocide that occurred of the Native American population afterwards is horrific and utterly wrong, but that's not what Thanksgiving's about. Am I right?
Right.
Okay. So today, some shithead in the UK retweets something that's come out from a whole pile of morons who've tweeted in the US, saying that the Washington Redskins sending this out and wishing all of their supporters and their families a happy Thanksgiving was politically incorrect because Thanksgiving apparently relates to the genocide of the Native American public.
Bullshit.
That's what I said. But they were like, hang on a second. It's not. It's Thanksgiving. It's people invading the country and taking over and genocide of the Native American population. No! It's Harvest Festival!
Yes.
Exactly.
How can you get upset? I got to say, and this is the question, it's not to do with that tweet because that's done and dusted. But my point was, I am sick and tired of Twitter being the opportunity for people to put up some shit in a meme that they think will solve the world's problems in 140 characters. And I am also sick and tired of people taking professional offence at stuff that is just non-existent in terms of negativity. I can't do with it anymore. I unsubscribed from anything to do with news 5 years ago. I stopped reading newspapers, I stopped watching TV news, and I stopped taking any online news. And the reason I did it was because I was sick and tired of the fact that all they wanted to do was make me feel bad about the world and didn't want to report things in a fair and balanced way and just wanted to talk bollocks. And if anyone comes now on Twitter and they've got a political retweet, I'll unfollow them. There's a guy called David Sutcliffe. I've unfollowed him. I can't follow him anymore because he's a lovely bloke. I get on really well with him. He's fine. Don't get me wrong. But he keeps retweeting shit that I just cannot deal with. It's just political bollocks that's constantly out there. Muller, who I love to bits. I go to rugby with him. He's a great friend. I love him to bits. But he retweeted something today about 2,000 people being treated for malnutrition in the UK. And I'm like, hang on a second. I want to know their dependency on alcohol or their dependency on drugs. I want to know if they own a mobile phone. I want to know if they smoke ahead of that. Because there's plenty of people I've seen today going down to London whereby if you chucked them a fiver, they wouldn't go and get themselves a square meal. They'd go and get themselves half a bottle of whiskey. So I want a bit more qualification in that meme, I'm afraid. And it's just, I'm fed up of Twitter doing that shit. I want to unfollow everyone and then I want to follow the people that don't want to retweet bollocks.
That's the problem with Twitter, though, isn't it? It's a retweet, and I think at the point that people retweet, they kind of think, you'll understand the context that I'm retweeting this, but you don't. It looks like bollocks. That's the problem. There's no context to a retweet. There's no, this is my opinion on it, or I agree with it or disagree with it. You don't really know why they are retweeting. Because, like I say, if Muller retweets something, is he agreeing with it or disagreeing with it? Is he having a social commentary on it? You just don't know. And that's my problem with Twitter as well.
I think there's a percentage of people out there who retweet things. They don't actually understand what they're retweeting. They've nothing to say. Oh. They kind of
on the bandwagon, hit the retweet button. I'll back you on that 138%. I believe a lot of people, And we talk, I talk about this recently with some stuff that's going on here in the U.S. I have friends that hear stuff on the news and they automatically go to bandwagoning to what they think is the right or wrong answer. I'm like, bro, you don't even know the basis of what you're talking about. So, for instance, there was this thing that came out recently, and it was about this lady who they're calling it the welfare queen, right? Because she's like this stripper that does this stuff, but she has these kids, and somehow she makes somewhere in the ordinance of like 300 grand a year, but yet she's pulling in the welfare.
I watched Flashdance this afternoon.
What is that?
I was thinking about strippers. That was all. Sorry. Oh, I watched Flashdance. It was cool.
Yeah. So anyway, the thing is, everyone starts going off, going into my tax dollars are paying for this and like, you know, whatever not. And it's like, yo, your tax dollars for welfare accounts where you live. This lady doesn't live in your state. You got nothing to say. And everybody who's saying that is not from the same state. I'm like, you don't pay in Hawaii for welfare for somebody, say, in New York. People in New York pay for somebody in New York. And only a small percentage of your tax that you think goes to welfare. A lot of it comes from general excise, you know. And then so people love to talk about what their tax dollars are paying for, but they don't know what their tax dollars are paying for. And that's just a prime example. I mean, there's many, many more, but that was the most egregious because it's like it takes you 5 seconds to figure out where your tax money actually goes versus always spouting off, my tax dollars are paying for that. And it's like, shut up.
Muller's tweeted in the chat room, and I've got to read this because he's absolutely right. He works for a charity. He does voluntary work entirely for a charity that deals with taking food and giving it to people who need it. He takes food from supermarkets which feed the poor. There are many people in the UK that can't afford to eat well, and I don't have a problem with that. And the fact that there were 2,000 people who were treated for malnutrition by the NHS last year, NHSSS is not a good screw up, NHS last year is a horrific statistic, and I totally think it's wrong. I'm not saying it's not. But what I'm saying is Twitter shoves that meme out with that figure, and I'm kind of like, yeah, okay, 2,000's A, not a lot of people in comparison to the British total population, and B, I've got no qualification within that. If you were talking about just straightforward homeless people, that's fine. But then I want to see dependency on drugs, dependency on alcohol. I want to see people that are out there, you know, and there's people that sit there and complain about the fact that they're losing their tax credits in the last few weeks. And you can see by the pallor of their skin, they're clearly chain smokers. And I just have a real problem with, look, if you're thinking it's far better to chain smoke and continue your habit than it is to put food in your kids' mouths, I've got a problem with that. And 140 character meme does not solve it. My problem is not with those people. My problem is not with 2,000 people that were treated for malnutrition last year. I think that's horrific. My problem is frigging Twitter. It's verbal terrorism. There you go. And I can't stand it anymore. I really want to just block everyone.
It's like litter, isn't it? It's just everywhere. You can pick it up and this, you can look at this and look at that. I spend less and less time on Twitter now because I look at the feed and I see a lot more retweets than I actually see original content from people actually saying things nowadays as well. I think that's the biggest problem because it's just I follow people because I want to hear what they say. I follow you guys and I follow people that I'm interested in, but all I ever see is retweets from other people as well. That's my major issue with
them. Saranac says, wipe it and start again, Ewan. That's what I was thinking. Deep Pan makes a great point. Rule one of any news channel is to keep showing controversial news, which keeps people watching for the advertising income, which is absolutely it. And I totally agree. And I cannot stand, I just do not watch news. I hear about things vicariously through Twitter, and a lot of the stuff that came out from the terrorist stuff was good because it was immediate and it was unbiased and it was this has happened. But then after the first day, I kind of stopped watching those because I wasn't interested because it then became political slant and Muslims versus everyone else. And I'm an atheist and I couldn't give a shit about religion. But I've got to this stage where Twitter appeals less and less, but that said, at 2 a.m, stood out on a track in the middle of the night, I looked at Twitter to keep me entertained for a few minutes while I'm waiting for something to happen. I have a lot of friends. I mean, there are a lot of friends. We go to you know, the first year we ever did the bash, there was 36 people turned up at a week's notice at my house, and it was people there that just walked through the door, and Steve Neighbour turns up. I'm like, hello, Steve Neighbour, I know who you are. You're at ClothedHQ on Twitter. And I knew all of these people from Twitter. And Sharon was like, so where do you know these people from? I know them from Twitter. So you met them on the internet? Yeah. And they come into our house? Yeah. Okay, well, I'm not going to be here, and neither's any of my jewellery. I was like, you're having a laugh. I said, I know who these people are. I know what they're like. I've never met Carl Swagger. Carl Swagger does the news show for us every week. If you don't listen to it, you should, because it's brilliant. Every day he produces 5 minutes of news about what's going on in the tech world. And I have never clapped eyes on Carl Swagger from ever. But he is someone that I value as a friend. And I met him on Twitter, effectively. So Twitter provided me with an awful lot of friends, but I just so much struggle with that. You're tweeting stuff that just wants to make me angry. You're tweeting some stuff about Jeremy Corbyn, who I couldn't give a shit about. You're tweeting some stuff about Campbell, who I couldn't give a shit about. And it's just, I find it now that it's just a relentless pile of political shit rather than being a haven for geeks to talk crap about Apple.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, it's kind of hilarious because so much of it, like you said, once the media people came to it, it kind of ruined it right away. Because then it turns out still a lot of people get their news from the Twitter. So at first, when it was just us sharing sort of what has been meta-filtered data, right? Like, I've gone through it and I said, this is something I think you should watch because we are of similar minds. You know, the fact that we hang on a show like this and go to same conventions and whatever is, we're of similar minds. So maybe if I post a news story, you would read my news story or I would read your news story because we are already starting from a certain point of commonality. And then the media people came in and they started building the channels and the super followers. And then some of the storytellers themselves, the Hannity and Combs, the, what's that, the old guy? I forget his name. Whatever the hell his name is. About 900 years old, he's still in the game. Like, those guys got big. Piers Morgan. Why don't I know the British guys and not the American guys?
Anyway, Larry King's American, I think.
Yeah, I know.
Or Canadian, probably, but.
So, anyway, these guys go there, and they got super following, and they ended up peeling back sort of the territory that we kind of owned for a second, which was a little bit clean. Like, we would skip the bozo stories and post kind of the good stuff that it was more or less information you need to know, not, like, I need you to take this thing and form an opinion and stand on it and fight with people. And from that moment on, literally about 4 years ago, it just went hella stupid. And recently, the big uproar in the U.S. is about McDonald's workers getting off a minimum wage and going up to 15. And all these people are having a cow because they're like, well, nurses don't make 15 an hour and paramedics don't make 15 an hour. And I'm like, yeah, but those jobs that everyone went to defend, like why fast food workers shouldn't make 15, aren't run by a company that just profited $27 billion off the backs of maybe, in many cases, people who don't have their full faculty. Like, it's not uncommon to go into a McDonald's and the cashier be someone of not 100% mental capability. And it's the nicest way I can say it without getting
flagged. Mate, you could probably go in the boardroom and find the same thing.
This is true. But you know what I'm like? And everyone's like, these guys don't deserve it because they just flip hamburgers. I'm like, have you ever worked fast food? Like, that is the dumbest job ever. Like, you do not want that job. And the people that want it, if we're paying them to, they're under the poverty level while the meantime, the corporation is making his money. And everyone goes, well, how come they don't talk about that? I'm like, because they're the biggest advertisers on the news station. You got the news from, you idiot. You don't bite the hands that feed you. You know what I mean? If McDonald's is spending $300 million a year in commercials on your channel, your news reporter isn't going to say the corporate guys are making a mint while they're paying the Gregs of society the lowest possible wage so they can make that mint. They're never going to bring that point up because they got to sell advertising to McDonald's. So you only hear about the paramedics and the nurses that are pissed off that the minimum wage people might be making the same as them after they went to school and got degrees. And I'm like, that alone shows you how the stories are so one-sided because they, like, nobody at all at once dissed any of the corporations that are paying these guys less than minimum wage. And so it's advertising. It's all advertising. And people that don't believe that are crazy.
Doc's the only one talking. You guys not got an opinion on this.
I'll retweet what you just said.
Oh. Cool answer.
Oh, yeah.
Today it was just kind of like, do you know what? This is crap. This is just utter rubbish because this is not what Twitter is. I feel like, you know, the end of the Gladiator, you know, this is Marcus Aurelius and this is not the Rome that he wanted and all that. That's what I feel Twitter's like. It's just, Twitter is not the droid I'm looking for. But it's heroin. It really is heroin because I can't live without it, but I can't live with it.
I've got to be honest, all I've seen on Twitter today is Black Friday, or Black Friday.
Oh, God,
Black Friday week, Black Friday fortnight. I think it's just expanding.
It's Black Year. Yes, it's Black Year. You can get deals every day for a year.
The equivalent of Black Friday?
Well, only because you do.
Yeah, Black Friday.
We don't have a Black Friday. We have your Black Friday. It's like Katy Perry, mate. Black Friday to England is like Katy Perry. She's here, but we didn't really want her.
Yeah.
We don't get a day off either.
No, we get to sit and watch it all day today and all day tomorrow.
And we're
but you do get to take advantage of the deals if they're, like, say, an Amazon or something.
Well,
like,
if you see the tweet from Chris Campion in time, yeah.
Yeah.
Otherwise, no, you don't. And you end up buying it at full price the following day.
Yeah, I know about the Boxing Day sales. That makes sense. But
the Boxing Day sales.
Black Friday has just gone stupid.
It used to be New Year.
Everyone starts a month early.
No, Boxing Day. See, now this is the thing: is New Year was the sales in the UK. So you get New Year's Day sales, and that would be when you'd go to the shops, and there'd be china in Rackham's that was three quarters of the price off, and that kind of stuff. And then all of a sudden, that became Boxing Day because everyone else had their New Year's Day, so someone wanted to do it sooner. And then you guys did the same thing. To be fair, you guys did it because of the fact that everyone just sat and went, it's the weekend, I'm having an extra day on Friday, bollocks, I'm not going out. So retail was dying, so they said, okay, fair enough, let's have Black Friday, and that will solve the problem. And it kind of did until people got killed in stampedes. But now they get killed in bits instead of real time. I read a thing that Amazon did 5.5 million per second last year on Black Friday.
Jeez.
Sales, 5.5 million. That's gross. That's not profit. That's 5.5 million gross per second.
That's
insane. And he owns a space rocket that lands itself. There you go. Anyway, that was my grant. I just thought I was really close this afternoon. I really was close. I thought, you know what? I'm just going to wipe everyone. Don't follow everyone. And then just go and pick out the people I do follow. And actually, what we're going to do is we've got Slack at the moment. And Slack, I absolutely adore Slack. It's absolutely brilliant as an application. And what we're going to do, we've got the Slack room in there. It's open. If you'd like to join the Slack room, then all you got to do is send an email to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. There you go. I'll delete the other bit, don't worry. And just say, I'd like to join the Slack room. And what we'll do is we'll add you to the Slack room. And you can go in there and you can shoot the shit with everyone else that listens to the network. And that's that. Everyone, all the presenters are in there. And you can come in and you can join in the chat and all that kind of stuff. There's some channels which are kind of like hived off that are locked, like the backroom stuff for like the servers and all that kind of thing. But the Slack room is open to everybody. So all you have to do is join us on Slack. Tell us your email address and then join the relevant network. And for some reason, my camera wants to switch itself on and off, which I have no idea why, but there we go. Send us an email. There we go. We'll sort it. Right, who's got a decent story as opposed to a rant from a...
I posted mine already.
Yeah, but how long ago was that?
All right, I'll do it again.
You did it. Is that the 19D one?
There you go. Send it.
The butt hurt is strong with this one. Is that?
No, that's not the story.
What?
Wow.
What the hell were you posting that for, dude?
No, I was talking. I was using that as a what we say to people on Twitter when they're just being dumb.
Thanks, but no, man. Are you saying my story was dumb?
No, not. Never mind.
Anyway,
not
get
you. I posted it about 8 times already. There's
dude, get on with it, Bubba.
Click it. Anyway,
I clicked it. Go on.
I'm going on about today. Raspberry Pi just dropped the $5 pewter. Like, yes, a full on working Raspberry Pi Zero, which is as powerful, really, as a Raspberry Pi Model B or Raspberry Pi 2, 512 megs RAM. It has an A11 ARM processor and a 1 gigahertz ARM processor as a CPU core, 2 USB slots, HDMI Puka, and a place to throw in a memory chip. But it's 5 bones. And they printed 10,000 and slapped them on the front of the
Magpie
Raspberry Pi magazine. So
free.
if you can't find one like right away, rush to the bookstore like after the show, of course. Don't leave now, we'll kill you. Run to the bookstore, see if you can snag one. Even if you don't know what you're gonna do with it yet, just snag one to have one, because this is historical. Like, no more AOL floppies or AOL CDs.
I made a curtain out of those at my previous apartment.
But this is just crazy. Like, I love the idea of getting the low-cost computer into someone's hands. And I like the fact that in order to use this, it does require you to go back. Like, when we all first started with computers, you didn't just buy it, plug it in, and do what you do. And no diss to my forefather, Steve Jobs, for the 1-2-3-step thing. I enjoyed it back in the day where the first day was a little bit of happiness, a little bit of frustration, a little bit of exploring, a little bit of reading, a little bit of learning. Now people plug in and fire up their programs and go straight to social media and start complaining about stuff, sort of what Ewan just said. So the Raspberry Pi is cool to me because it brings back a little bit of OG computing and a little bit of, like, anybody can get their hands on one and start at this. And it's a great thing. It will allow students to learn. You can do amazing stuff with a Raspberry Pi, but I'm mostly going to build one to try to set up a home theater PC. And it's neat. This thing is smaller than the Fiverr, but it only costs a Fiverr, if that makes any sense.
Is that so you can run Plex on it?
Yeah, I'm going to run Plex and Kodi.
I'll be sure to tell Greeny. There's some comments in the chat room that are really quite pertinent here. Saranax says it's a bare-bones computer, and actually I think it's beneath a bare-bones computer. It's not even quite up to a bare-bones computer in terms of what you buy online. How many of you guys, question one, how many of you guys own a Pi of some description? And question two is one that's really worth answering. Deepan says, what is the Raspberry Pi for? And I know what I think is an answer, but I'm interested in what you guys think. Chris?
Never use one. Something I'm interested in using one. And interestingly, I'm a governor at my daughter's school. And in the years 6 and 7, there's a proposal actually to buy a lot of Raspberry Pis in. And that's what they're going to use as the basis for teaching some basic coding. So not something I've used yet, but intrigued. And if I'm honest, might even join in some of the lessons and see if I can learn something from them.
Righty?
Well, I think the fact that it's a bare-bones computer, because they get all of this modern computer stuff, iPhones and Macs stuff, all just packaged up absolutely beautiful. I think it's just great for kids to see what a computer actually is, because I don't think they appreciate what goes on inside it. And I think if you actually... In the same way that kids have embraced Minecraft, and when my daughter first got into Minecraft, I said, I don't get the point. And we sat here the other day, and she'd built the Total Wipeout course. And if you've seen Total Wipeout in the UK, it's got those, when they go across the obstacle course, it's got those little boxing gloves that punch out. And she'd used Firestone and all that sort of thing to make these things punch out. And she's sitting there, she's programmed that within Minecraft. And I'm going, that's bloody amazing. And I sat down and I said to her, how do you do that? And she went through it. And I was absolutely amazed. And I think if I'd sat down and given her a 5-quid computer, it doesn't matter if she messes it up, she'd take that and go absolutely mental over. And I think the kids who are a generation of Minecraft would be in awe of this. I think it's, computing is packaged up too pretty, too inaccessible, and I think this is actually a really good way to go back to basics.
Doc?
Yeah, so I'm going to agree with Paul. One of the things as a child, and this is really weird because I didn't think about it until you told me to think about it, so it's kind of nice that you asked this question. as a kid, I was the dude that was always hungry. Granted, I grew up in a house with mostly women, so I had my free reign of food. But somewhere at about
I was going to say, you don't look like a dude that's hungry.
Somewhere in about, I'm going to call it 6 or 7, I went and I told my grand, I'm like, yo, I'm hungry. And she was like, cool, get in here. I'm going to show you something. And we sat down and she showed me, you know, the flour, the water, the yeast, like how to make bread. And she's like, instead of making a general sandwich, I'm going to show you how to make bread. Like the first thing I ever learned how to make with my grand was a loaf of bread. And when I cut that bread, I used to complain because I didn't like the wheat bread because it was too crunchy. I wanted Wonder Bread, which is the chemical crap that they feed kids here. And after I made the bread and I made the sandwich after, like literally, that was the best damn cheese sandwich ever tasted in my life. And my grandmother was like, see, you need to learn how to cook, not just eat. And any dude that knows how to cook, you'll go much better as a man knowing how to cook.
Now, that's a great analogy. But what do you do if you don't have a grandma? Because the problem I've got is, so the pie is something that I've really looked at. And I thought, I'll buy this for Ellis, because Ellis is constantly going about hacking. And he said, oh, I could hack the PS3. I said, no. What you're talking about is downloading a program that you can run off a data stick, and that's not hacking. That's being someone's git on the end of another program that they've written and doing what they want. Hacking is about you doing what you want. And he's like, okay, let's do that. And I thought, okay, so I'll buy him an Arduino, or I'll buy him a Pi. But the problem is, I mean, Joe DeMax paid me a massive compliment once. He said that my Hello World was still in beta, and that really is far beyond my capability for coding that I've actually got.
That's awesome.
So,
brother, so you don't need a grand now, because our grand now is YouTube. No. I mean, even I'm watching people that never knew how to cook learn how to cook. Like,
I'm saying,
great cook, so you can do it.
I'm sitting looking at this thing going, actually, this would be cracking for Ellis to get started on hacking. And we could do it together, except the fact that he's probably way beyond me.
But it's something you can do together. So Righty's correct. And Chris is correct wherever he went. I think it's the perfect way to start. And even if you didn't go for the $5 one, like if you started at the $35 model, which is the B or the Raspberry Pi 2, I mean, you're still way under screwing up a PS3 or a PS4.
Yeah, no, exactly. Go on, Ronnie.
It's the most perfect version of a tech blank canvas, because they can go and look at different distros that they want to do. And there's so much for the Pi. I don't know how long it's been around, 3-4 years now. There's so much stuff out there. They haven't got to just go through a kind of uniform, you install this and do that. They can choose which distro they want. They can choose what they want to do with it. It's almost like literally like giving them, you know, put them up on a canvas and saying, paint what you want. And that's the great thing. They can, their imagination is their own limitation.
Go on, Chris.
I think you're right, Paul. I think you hit the nail on the head at the start of what you said around the price point. When you're coming in as cheap as it is, if there's a problem with it, the damage it, you have to wipe it. If you can't recover from that, buy a new one. It's cheap.
Yeah, I remember when Bitcoin first came out, everybody was making little computer clusters out of Raspberry Pis, which I thought was just epic. And, you know, even something as simple as teaching them how to set up a Plex server, a lot of that will require some programming, some terminal learning. Like, you can get them to learn the terminal stuff. Like, Bookshots has a really, really cool terminal podcast that you can listen to. And it's like 30 different episodes, but he can get in there and he can play with terminal on something that he can't break.
I mean, this is a great question, I think, out of there, because I'm sure there's an awful lot of people that listen to this show. I'm a geek, I love my tech, but I come at tech from photography viewpoint, so I sat and wrote a cricket scoreboard on a Spectrum years ago, and I you know, 1-0 CLS, 2-0, go to 3-0, and I learnt very basic. By myself. But when it comes to something like a Pi, I have no clue where to kind of guide Ellis, and that would be the better answer or response from you guys. It is, okay, so I say, right, I think Ellis would be great with a Pi. I think I would learn something with him. We could do it together, but what do I do with it? You know, you're talking straight away there about distros, and yeah, I understand Mint and all that kind of stuff, but I want Ellis to get into this as someone who, you know, he wants this idea of hacking, that's fine, but I want him to get in at the code level. I don't want to get him as just like running a program. When you say just shove a distro on it, that's kind of hitting where I want him to avoid in my mind. Righty,
so robotics or a light controller, something that he can help you with, a programmable light controller that will kind of control basically what you just bought from Pauly, but then you connect it to the Pi to do the controller, the colorization. I think the other thing that would be really cool for you guys to do is some form of a NAS, and there's NAS programs that would require him to pull a distro, run the make, basically run a bunch of, you know, Python scripts that will help you build this NAS, which would be a cool way for you to show how you could, you know, drop your photos in, say from your camera with the built-in Wi-Fi, that it would dump the photos to the Pi, to the hard drive automatically. So he's doing something that's helping Dad, but then also learning.
So about when you're saying she loves the BBC Basic, and that's the essence of where I started. What about a computer magazine like Input on how to program, or Code Academy and that kind of stuff, Khan Academy? Righty, you were about to say something.
No, it's because one of the simple things we did with the Pi was build the security system. So plug a webcam in, and then because a lot of webcams aren't written for the Pi or for Linux distros, then you have to go out and write drivers. And those are really important things. And you spend a lot of time looking at YouTube videos, but kids are seeing this code. You know, it's almost like it's like Lego for computing, because you can bolt things on and add different things and add hardware and upgrade and all that sort of stuff. You can't, you know, living in the Mac world, you can't upgrade a Mac anymore. And kids don't even know how to upgrade a PC, put the RAM in and all that sort of stuff. I think just having this one disposable little thing that you could put in, I don't know, you could build a drone with it, or you could build a remote control car with it. If it breaks, it doesn't matter. But because of that low price point, there's no fear. And I think that lack of fear allows kids or anyone who gets involved with a Pi to be a little more adventurous.
What's quite interesting is the fact that you're saying that about the drone thing, and that's really interesting to me, because I've bought some of the pre-programmed flight controllers for the drones that I've got, and on a couple of occasions they haven't worked, and I've actually bothered to go on the internet, find out what the fault is, find out what the code light means, then find out how to change it and how to change the settings so that it does what I want it to do. And I haven't done that with any fear, but when you show me a Pi and said, right, here's a blank motherboard, effectively fill it with whatever you want, it's kind of like, whoa.
Yeah,
it's unfair.
If you've got YouTube, pretty much all you need, isn't it, to start learning and playing, like you say, price point. I mean, I should do that without anything.
Yeah. You've gone really wobbly there, Chris. I don't know what you've done. Are you on wireless or...?
No, cable.
You're dropping packets like a drug dealer on a Birmingham canal, mate.
Can I add? Remember the first batch I came to at your house, and then the chap who turned up and he built the Segway. He built a Segway, hadn't he?
Thatch. Yeah.
Yeah. And we were running up and down your road, and he said there's two Pentium 2 processors in there, and probably the Pi is probably putting it that sort of processing power now. And I'm looking at that and going, I looked at that and I thought, I'd really love to build my own Segway. And that thing was rock solid, wasn't it? It was absolutely amazing.
Well, have you seen his unicycle?
I haven't seen his unicycle, no.
So he's got, effectively, Nick Thatcher is on Twitter. He runs a company called Thatch. And he's Clive Sinclair, but he hasn't got, he can't get it out there for some reason. I don't know why not. But he's effectively built a unicycle that's motorized, that runs on an Arduino processor, and it's like a Segway. So you sit on it and you can't fall off it. You can tilt sideways, but you can't do forwards and back, because if you lean forwards, it goes forwards, and if you lean back, it goes back. It does exactly what a Segway does, and it's a single wheel. He took it with Paul Kirkle to the gamer show, EGX, when it was at the NEC a couple of years ago. And he was riding it round in the morning before everything started off, but he wasn't allowed to ride it when people were there. But it was unbelievable. And he does some fantastic stuff. He does 3D printing, and he's awesome. And all of that's based on Arduino stuff.
Exactly. So that makes me think, do you know what? For a couple, you know, he had one in each wheel, didn't he? A couple of computers in each wheel. For a tenner, I could probably have a go at that. And that's the exciting thing about it.
Just Google the Thatch unicycle.
I put the video in the chat.
Yeah. There's also a video from the bash that we had at my place, where he's riding up and down on it somewhere on YouTube. It is superb. If you want to know any of the links that anyone puts in the chat room, like the stories or the cool things and that kind of stuff, go to britishtechnetwork.com/chat, and in there, just navigate to the relevant day. There's a calendar that appears. If you know that we record the big show on a Thursday, just go and click on the Thursday, and it'll show the entire contents of the chat room. And all the people that are in the chat room now are trying to delete their posts that they put in where they're slagging people off and saying things which are completely libelous. But at britishnetwork.com/chat, and you can see all of the stuff that that went on in the chat room during this show and any of the shows that we've got. So during the Mac show tomorrow, all the cool things, all the stories, they'll all be in there. There we go. Good story, Doc. I've got to say, the Pi is something which I really want to get into, and I actually went as far as buying a book on kind of like how to get started with the Raspberry Pi, but I didn't buy a Raspberry Pi, unfortunately. Righty boy, what's your story, dude?
My story is what EE and O2 are considering at the moment. There's been a lot of
chopping Kevin Bacon's nuts off.
Pardon?
Chopping Kevin Bacon's nuts off.
Well, there is that, isn't it? That's not what they're thinking about at the moment. But there's been a lot of talk about ad blockers and stuff at the moment, especially with iOS 9 and content blockers. But EE, this week, EE and O2 have both announced they are seriously considering blocking content on their phones that they provide to their customers.
Just qualify that. What are they blocking? Blocking people who have ad blockers, or are they blocking
ads? They're seriously talking about blocking adverts or blocking content.
Did you see the story this week about the fact that Yahoo are running an A-B test at the moment?
No, I didn't see that, no.
Right, Yahoo are running an A-B test on their email. I think it's only if you access via a browser. I don't think it's if you work via Sparrow or anything like that. Or a client. But basically, if you run a Yahoo Mail and you access it through a browser, they are doing an A-B test at the moment where a certain proportion of you will get a response that says, if you are running an ad blocker, you cannot see your Gmail, your Ymail.
Now, a lot of websites are doing that as well, because I run an ad blocker, and if I go there, it goes, We see you run an ad blocker. Yeah,
hang on a second. Let's draw a division here between content and email, because I think email is at the point of being, hang on a second, my bank talks me through email. Hang on a second. The people that provide my electricity talk to me through my gas, my telephone, my internet service provider. The number of people who communicate with me through email is now massive. And to suddenly start going, do you know what? Because you run an ad blocker, we're not going to give you that service anymore. I think that's the biggest FU that there is out there on the market at the moment. And me and Jason Hooper had a couple of comments yesterday. And he said, oh, well, you know, there's a lot of people do that, and it is a free service, and they provide it, and all that kind of thing. I'm like, but there isn't a clearer statement out there that says that you are the product than taking away your email. That is massive.
Yeah.
The ad blocker thing at the moment, I think, is a real, it's a real nexus. It's a real crux of, it can go one way or the other, because if EA is saying, right, we're going to do built-in ad blockers by default, that's got a massive consequence to its users.
Well, exactly. But the thing I was thinking is, if EE and O2 do this, are they blocking adverts for the benefit of their customers, giving them a better experience, or are they building their own little ad network where companies like Google or Amazon and all that sort of thing, they're controlling the ads that people see, and they're going to charge a higher price to appear on phones on their network? And I think, because you could say they're doing it as differentiator, so they could say, you know, come to EEO2, we block the ads on the internet, you know, you get a better experience. But will you still get ads from certain people who pay EEO2 more money? Yeah. And I think that might be the way they...
Chat room is saying BT uses Yahoo for their mail.
Yeah.
So effectively, if you're running an ad blocker on your mobile platform or your desktop, then you could be losing out on your email through through Yahoo.
But EE, too, is saying they are seriously considering this. And if they actually go through with it and it becomes a popular thing, what stops like home broadband providers doing the same thing? So it almost becomes a kind of, net neutrality kind of thing where they're saying, well, if you want to advertise to our users, you've got to pay us a lot more money. So they're making money off the back of, yes, telling us they're protecting us or giving us a better experience. But what they're actually doing is lining their own pockets, charging people more money to get to us.
And is there a distinction? So you've got your free services like your Hotmails, your Yahoos, your Gmails, where they're making money through ads, through ad revenue. Is there a scenario where some of the email hostings that are done through ISPs, your sky.com email addresses and so forth, you're paying them and your email, the email client, the email service that you're getting through them is a byproduct of the service that you're buying. Is there a difference in there that might force potentially people away from the likes of Yahoo into other email providers at cost to avoid stuff like this?
Well, I think that's the point. I think it's been the differentiator. Google make all of their money off ads, and Apple are trying to block ads on the mobile web to force people into apps where they can see iAds. Google's looking at losing a lot of revenue through people not seeing their ads on the web. I think a lot of free services are wholly ad based, and you could say that if you do use an ad blocker and using a free service and you're not looking at the ads, they could easily turn around and say, no, you can't use this. But like you insist, give us your email, that's your lifeline. So that could push you to paid services as well. So companies like Google could turn around and say, if you're running an ad blocker, then you can't use free Gmail. You've got to pay us £10 a month to look at your email.
I almost wish they would go to some sort of a pay service for a couple of different things, couple of different reasons. I don't really care about the ads on the side, and I'm cool with that, but I'm just so sick of people that keep going to the fact that you are the commodity, which in many cases you are. It's not that that's not a true statement, but there's people that understand it like us, and we've decided that we don't care, but then there's the people that don't understand it, and yet they still complain that they get ads, and it's like, well, you don't get both. So I almost want them to offer similar to the pro, because I have my domain, I have four different ones where I have a basically Google Apps for Business, if you will, the $5 a month per user kind of thing, or $50 a year per user. And I almost wish they did that to just regular email, just so that people can stop. Yeah, email's not free. It's a very hard thing to do, and it's a lot of money to run those service. And yes, Google has billions of dollars, but they got those billions of dollars so they can keep running this service. Without those $1 billion, they couldn't give us all free email. So stop giving it away free so that people can stop bitching about it.
Well, there's a certain point that actually this is Yahoo doing an A-B test.
It's Yahoo.
This is my point, exactly. There's a certain point where I sit and thinking, well, hang on a second. So Yahoo are saying, do you know what? If you're in ad blockers, we're not going to give you your email. What proportion of people going, do you know what? Because I'm going to go to Gmail. Because they're not doing this to me. Yahoo is not in a strong enough position to start taking this kind of stance and saying to people, do you know what? We rely on adverts. Therefore, if you don't have adverts with us, then sod off. Because Gmail goes, do you know what? Come over here. Yeah, no worries. And we'll give you emails and we'll give you adverts by the back door, which you won't even notice. But, but we're not overtly doing A-B testing that tells you to piss off if we're not doing what you want us to do. And email is too strategic in people's lives to be screwing with it. That's my view.
Yeah. They gave it away for free for too long to kind of take it back, but at the same token, like, people just don't understand the value of the service that they're getting. What I find more funny, and not in a hilarious way, but in a peculiar way, is how many people I've heard on podcasts recently that have shows and sites going, hey, when you come to our site, please don't use an ad blocker because this is how we're able to keep the site going. And they're really explaining to people what it's for. And it's like, you can help us by letting the ads flow. You can help us even more by, you know, clicking some of the ads that make sense to you. But please don't run a blocker, because that's literally how we survive and we're able to put on this show or put on this website.
Yeah.
And it's weird that we've had to come to that. But again, we've had free info for so long. People don't understand. This is like what we used to pay, you know, 7-8 quid a month for a magazine. But we get the magazine every day, and there's not a whole staff of people. There's probably 3 or 4 dudes busting their crank to send you what they send you. Like, you know, Dave Kahlo, Steve Sandy, you know, and those cats over at Apple World Today. Like, those guys are busting their crank to send you something out, and they got their Patreon, but they're hanging by their teeth, you know? So, like, if they don't run their ads and people are blocking them, you're kind of, I don't know, stealing from our friends, you know? Like, it's a weird spot where we're at with this stuff right now.
It is. I think Apple's inclusion of ad blockers has actually thrown a massive curveball into the market. And you look at organizations which are huge in terms of economy, like Google and Yahoo, that have an awful lot of money that is based around ad content, are suddenly now being told shove off. And that's... They don't. It's almost like the dinosaurs of the new age, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
There was companies out there that were dinosaurs before the meteor struck, and now these guys are dinosaurs after the meteor has struck. To a certain degree.
Yeah.
Kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm. But they need to, content blockers are there for a reason. People are annoyed with them, but it means that people have to do more and more kind of interesting ways to advertise things.
Well, surely the point is the fact that advertising has got too overt and rather less covert than it should have done.
Hmm. Well, I have a built-in ad blocker. I see adverts on the web and I'm completely oblivious to them. You know, I've learned to live with them. I think we passed the tipping point where it was too ridiculous, punch the monkey and all that sort of stuff. I think we're better off than we are now. And targeted ads aren't too bad. You know, sometimes I see things I do want. Sometimes I'll see an advert of something that I bought. It's frustrating, but I understand the reason that I receive adverts, because I use services that I don't pay for. So I understand it. But like you say, with publications, for a lot of really, really talented people out there who give us content every single day, that's their breadline. And it is really sad that, you know, if E and O2 carry on with this and then mobile providers, broadband providers do it as well. Yeah, you can see no adverts on the internet at all. And all of this media that we actually pay our broadband subscriptions for dies.
Yeah. I just think that the process, if you look at the 5-second adverts on YouTube, the ones that allow you to cancel after 5 seconds, I watch an awful lot of those, because they come out and they know in that first 5 seconds they've got to get my attention, and more often than not they actually do get it. Whereas the ones where I go to Sky and it's like, Lewis Hamilton said the following, okay, I'll click on the story, here we go, and it goes, you've got 1.5 minutes of advertising before you see the story of Lewis Hamilton talking about what he's upset about. Do you know what, Lewis? Love you to bits, mate, but awfully sorry. I don't give a shit.
Exactly. I feel you on that for sure.
Not interested. And it's not Lewis Hamilton. It's about the fact that there is very few people out there in the news world who have anything to say that I'm willing to wait 1.5 minutes for. That's the point. Give me 5 seconds, and actually, I'll get to the end of that and go, oh, okay, that's quite interesting. Whereas actually, you know, give me 30 seconds, give me a minute, give me a minute and a half, and I go, no, sorry, not interested anymore. And that's where advertising's let itself down badly.
I think this is where advertisers now are going to have to start to earn the crust a bit more. They're going to have to get a lot more creative. They're going to have to get people bought in.
They're going to have to do the job they're getting paid for in the first place.
Exactly.
Yes, that's more like it. Who's Lewis Hamilton, says Bronwyn? Bronwyn's been living on Mars. He's the world champion, mate. He's still the world champion.
He is.
Formula One. Now then, would you like to advertise on our network? Because you can if you want. 15,000 people listen to this show every week. We've got a new stats engine.
Really?
Yeah, we've got a new stats engine. Paul Wheatley, we've got some fantastic people who work in the back end of BTN. Anders, Shads, and Wheaters. And Anders has come up with a whole, all the live streaming that you get via, Wheaters did the live streaming via Flash. Anders has done the live streaming via HTML5. And he's also started a stats program. He's the one that did the chat bot as well. And he's got a whole load of stuff that he's bringing forwards. Wheaters has done a fantastic stats package at the back end of BTN. He's going to sell it eventually because it's brilliant. It's really that good. You install it on your WordPress server and it tells you all of the downloads that you've got. It tells you all of the operating systems that have done the downloads. It tells you the numbers, unique IPs and so on. 15,000 people listen to this show every week. 22,000 people listen to the Mac show every week. I'm sure there's a bit of a crossover, don't get me wrong, but we're well worth listening to, apparently. And this is quite interesting. Based on last month, the big show, the one you're listening to right now, is up 76%. For some reason, the big show is doing really, really well in iTunes at the moment and downloads. And we are 356% up on last October. But last October was a bit shit, has to be said. I don't think we did many shows. There you go. Thanks to Wheaters for doing the stats stuff, because he's finished it this week and it's absolutely stunning. 69.94% video as well. You're all watching on video rather than listening on audio, which is fantastic too. If you're interested in the package for your WordPress process, then send us an email to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com and I'll put you in touch with Wheaters, and Wheaters will tell you how to go about installing it on your own system, potentially. It is brilliant. Thank you so much, Paul, for all the work that you do. It's absolutely brilliant. And also Anders, and also Shads, and all the people in the back end, because we'd be lost. And there's some really, really cool stuff coming forwards. Have you noticed the NQL?
Yes.
You have noticed the NQL. If you're following British Tech, at British Tech on Twitter, then every sort of 45 minutes to an hour, you'll get a tweet that says, the next show is on NQL, and it'll give you a link to click. Basically, what we're doing is we're showing all of the past shows that we've got on the server. This is thanks to Paul Shadwell and a whole lot of people that he knows in Switzerland that allowed us to do this. It basically goes back to all of the shows that we've done in the past, and it says, right, here we go, here's a completely random show from the past. And I tweeted out this week, and I am actually rather proud of this, we have an ability to create the most inappropriate show titles that you've ever seen in your life that will beat the Apple censorship progress, definitely. It's brilliant. If you'd like to not get these tweets, that's fine. All you have to do is mute the hashtag BTNNQL, all in caps, and you will get no notifications about what's going on the NQL channel. The NQL channel stands for Not Quite Live, and it's all the past stuff. But actually, there's been some absolute beauties. One of those, Doc, went out a little bit this afternoon, and it's the one about the snookums and the bullfrog with tits. And I've got to say, that is an absolute classic. If you haven't listened to that, then go back and have a look through the server and get it. inappropriate show titles are the primary reason why I watch Ewan, says Bronwyn. Thank you, mate. Do appreciate that. So have a look back. Have a follow the NQL channel. If you go to britishtechnetwork.com/live when we're not broadcasting, you are guaranteed a BTN show. It could be the guitar show with Lee Peterson. It could be the gamer show with Sam and Chiz and Paul Wheatley. It could be the Mac show, the Big show. It could be the House of Cards show with Jackie Hearn. It could be anything you like. And you might go, oh, do you know what? I should have watched more of those. And then you can go back onto our channel and look at those and see more and more of them. It's well worth having a look at. Check it out. Subscribe to @BritishTech if you want the notifications of when the shows are coming up. And if not, then just go to britishtechnetwork.com and /, and look at the shows that we've got for you. Right, Chris, I know that you were focused on your story because you came in at the last minute, Mr. Super Sub, the Neil Fairclough of BTN. What is your story, sir?
So I've just dropped it in the chat room. So my story this week is transport for London. So they obviously they lost the challenge against Uber, and their fight back is to announce plans to put card terminals in London taxis finally. So
there's quite a few that do accept PIN payments, don't they?
Yeah, I think it's very much a luck of the draw, though, if you manage to flag one of them down and they've got a terminal in there. I'm down in London probably once, twice a month and still see plenty of cash-only signs in the window and they're pulling up. And I just think it's about time now that all of the black cabs, they need it, one, to fight back against the likes of Uber, but it's about time that they've got it right across the black cab network.
Are you a cabbie lover? And they're offering
car payments. Pardon?
Are you a cabbie lover?
No, not particularly. I was down there last week. I was at an awards do last week, and it kind of brought it home to me how I don't always have cash in the pocket. So I got on the train in Leeds, got some breakfast, paid. I had it contactless for that. Jumped on the train, got off at the King's Cross, and it was Apple Pay on the tube round to the hotel. By the time checked into the hotel and then made our way from sort of South Kensington down to Battersea Park in the evening, and realised at that point, no cash on me. Do I want to go for a little trek around to find the cash machine at that point? I ended up doing Uber in London, which, generally speaking, not a huge fan of Uber, don't particularly trust them in Leeds. I've not found them as reliable as I think they should. But at that point, in the middle of London, no cash in my pocket, I'm thinking, I'm not convinced I'm going to get the black cab. Excuse me, I'm not convinced I'm going to get the black cab that will accept cards. I'm going Uber at this point. So I think from a convenience point of view, they need to get card machines in there. They need to be able to either accept contactless, Apple Pay, or just a straightforward sort of chip and pin, just to keep up with the competition and the likes of Uber.
I mean, my problem with London, I stay away from Uber now, and the reason I stay away from it is the surcharging. I think that's horrific, because black cabs don't do that. I've got a cab from Archway in the past into the Haymarket, and they put a 3x charge. It cost me £72 to go 6 miles, not even. And actually, when I got there, I complained about the fare, because the route that the guy had taken was horrific. It was awful. And it wasn't the quickest. I know there was 3x charging on it before I booked it. That's fair enough, I get that. But actually, the same fare in a black cab would have cost me £24. And it was horrifically charged, and in the end I got £24 wiped off the bill, but even that really didn't cover it. If you get an Uber off peak, you will pay significantly less probably than a black cab.
Yeah, my journey last week, it was about 6:15 in the evening, so we're talking fairly peak period, and in the black cab home, I jumped in that with a colleague, the black cab home was 18.
And Chris is gone. So you see, Chris is lying, because that's otherwise Skype wouldn't have cut him off.
No.
I tell you what, the way Skype works, you'd think it was run by Microsoft. Bloody awful. No, but my point, just finishing off my point, which Chris interrupted, stuff him, was that if you're talking about going on peak periods, Uber is crap. Black cabs are far cheaper. If you're going off peak, then Uber wins out an awful lot, you know, sort of 9 p.m. at night. So 10 p.m. on a Sunday, you're going to get far better deals with Uber than you're ever going to get with black cabs. But if you go through peak periods, black cabs invariably, my experience, work out far cheaper.
And that's what happened when they went global. See, the reason why Uber is so good here is, you're absolutely correct too. During peak times, you can end up paying more for a taxi, but it is a value-add service, because you're not getting some random weirdo dude in an ugly car that people have done weird sex acts behind the glass, and you know, you might sit on a needle and all this other crazy stuff. You guys have an immaculate cab service. I mean, I learned not maybe a couple years back, like, dudes got to go through like 3 years of training, and they get tested on not getting lost and all this other crazy stuff just to get licensed. I have been in a cab. Honolulu is not the hardest city to get around. And I live about a mile and a half away from the arena where we watch, you know, the various concerts, right? So I was going to go watch a No Doubt concert, and I went to go catch a taxi, and the dude got lost going to the arena. Like, if you're a cab driver and you don't know how to get to the arena and the stadium, you should just be fired already, right?
Exactly.
But it wouldn't be so bad if it wasn't a half a mile straight.
Though to be fair, No Doubt have only had one decent song.
No, it's true. I was not going for myself. Let's cover that. Sometimes as a man, you got to eat it and do what you're supposed to do, right? So anyway, to get to the stadium from my house or the arena from my house, it's a half a mile straight up one road, take a right, and a mile down the other road, and then you're there. So there's no turns to get lost. There's one freaking turn, and the dude acts like he doesn't know where he's going. And part of me is going, he's either really stupid or he's trying to jack the fare, and that's what cabbies in the U.S. do. If they think you don't know where you are, because I get in the cab, he sees me, he assumes I'm tourist in Hawaii, he tries to drive me around the BS and backwards. And that leaves a sour taste in my mouth. One, the A, you think I'm stupid. B, if you're doing it to me, you're doing it to the actual tourist. And that's just bad for the overall tourist experience, which is bad for all of the businesses in a tour-oriented town such as myself. So I always pick Uber because I know you're not going to get dicked with. And in most cases, you save money. But during the peak time, yeah, you got to go back to, like, trusting taking a taxi where the taxi driver won't try to, like, you know, snake you. And I run into the same thing in New York. You know, when I go home, they don't know I'm from New York initially. So they try to go directions, and I start giving them directions. Like, oh, I thought you're from Hawaii. I go, yeah, but I grew up here, and you just got busted trying to freaking drive an extra 2 miles.
Yeah, I mean, whenever I get into, we've got a local firm here, TC Cars, and they're absolutely brilliant, don't get me wrong. But when I get in, they go, have you got a preferred route? And I go, yeah, the shortest one.
Yeah, I got that when I was there.
Yeah. Have you got a preferred route? Yes, the shortest one.
Yo, cabbies in New York and in the major cities, even in San Francisco, they do that because they want to tell you right away that I'm not going to cheat you going my way, that you think your way is faster. And a lot of times what happens is the customers, know-it-all customers especially, will send them the long way, and they can make money without having to try to cheat you because you told them to go that way.
The one thing that annoys me is with the Uber case is strictly speaking, from the way I understood it, was that unless you're a Hackney carriage, licensed as a Hackney carriage, that allows you to charge time and distance. And if you're a private hire, you can only charge distance. And my understanding is that Uber shouldn't be charging time and distance, and they are. And that's the real problem in the UK. Hackney carriages can charge time and distance, but private hire can only charge distance. And that really is what pisses me off more than anything, because Uber will take a route and it's kind of like, this is not the best route. They will go down the middle of Regent Street and you're like, what the fudge are you doing sitting on Regent Street? The traffic is static. You should be cutting across and going down some of the back roads. You shouldn't be coming anywhere near Regent Street when you go from Victoria to Euston. And they do every time. And that annoys me, because they shouldn't be charging for the time because of the fact that they don't know how to stay off the routes. And the one thing I found with black cabs is, if you say to them, I want to go from here to here, they go, fine. And they stay off the routes that sit static. They go down back routes. They go down those little side roads. They've got the knowledge, in inverted commas, because that's what it is, to go into areas where Uber won't go. They follow the sat-nav, and you cannot do London on a sat-nav. It just does not work at all.
I totally agree. You see the black cabs and... sort of forget the phrase, sort of like alley rats. They're in and out every sort of nook and cranny. They find a way through the smallest little cobbled back streets and take shortcuts. You'd never see that with Uber.
Yeah. Bromley says, I never take yellow cabs in New York because they're assholes. I hope they never get a picture of you, girl, and know who you are. Because Dan DeVito is really, really bad. Never mind Judd Hirsch. That shows my age, doesn't it?
And mine.
Really? Do you remember that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Danny DeVito and Judd Hirsch.
Not good. Not good. See, he knows.
There you go. Bronwyn says she doesn't give a shit about them. Thank you, darling. Very good.
Good girl.
This podcast and all this is booked by UK2. Now, if you don't subscribe through UK2 to your channel and to your network and to your domain, then God, what are you doing? They've been supporting us now for the last 5 years. If you want anything for the web, domain name, UK2.net. If you want co-location services, web hosting, if you want virtual servers, if you want dedicated servers, they are the people to go to. They're absolutely fantastic. They really have looked after us for a very long period of time, and we will probably never get away from them. They're with us for as long as we can tell. Go to britishnetwork.com/UK2 if you want to just even sign into your account. If you want the offer codes, go to britishnetwork.com/sponsors, and that will give you the offer codes to get in your basket. Get rid of your domain name, 20% off domain names, I think, 50% off dedicated servers for the first month. Some really, really big deals in there. Check them out. They're well worth going to because they're just superb. They look after BTN customers terribly well. If you've got a problem, then their tech support is second to none. Please check them out because they look after us. And also they do 100tb.com. If you're in America and you're thinking, oh, UK2's great, but I live in America, so that's not really for me. 100tb.com for dedicated servers. They start at $139 a month. And the server that you are watching, if you watch the live feed, is the one that you'll get from 100tb.com. It's blisteringly fast. So check them out as well. And also we've got a deal coming up with Swiss Cloud that is about backing up your server, which is brilliant, superb. The other thing to say is you need to listen next week. How many of you guys have got Clean My Mac?
I do.
Yep.
Clean My Mac, Hider 2, Genie, Duplicate Genie.
If you own a Mac and you don't have Clean My Mac, you're stupid. No, I'm serious. It's like, so it's right up there with, I own a Mac and I don't have a subscription to Screencasts Online. You're stupid. I'm sorry. I own a Mac and I don't listen to the Maccast. You're stupid. I'm sorry. You can't do it. If you own a Mac and you don't have a subscription to Clean My Mac, then you're stupid. If you've got two, and you're thinking, well, I've been thinking about getting three, but I'm not so sure anymore. Listen next week. I promise you that if you listen to the Mac Show and the Big Show next week, and then the Gamer Show the following Monday, you will make it well worth your while to upgrade. There is a discount code which is on your way. If you're a BTN listener, you will get a discount code for Clean My Mac 3. If you're on 2, don't worry, wait, because you can upgrade. If you want to buy 3 and you're thinking, oh, whether I should or I shouldn't, there's a discount code next week. Listen on Thursday, Friday and Monday next week and the week after, and you will get a discount code for Clean My Mac, because I'm serious, I'm not joking. I own 5 licenses for Clean My Mac, and I would never, ever, ever not have those 5 licenses for Clean My Mac. It's absolutely brilliant for keeping your Mac absolutely in tip-top condition and flying like you wouldn't believe. And if someone says, oh yeah, but don't forget Mac Keeper.
No.
Oh, no. Ooh. No. Not even close. No, I mean, that is like a strip of toilet paper against an entire bath towel in terms of absorbency. Clean My Mac 3 next week. Listen out, because it's going to be well worth it. I promise you. Right, time for the cool thing. Doc Rock, who looks like actually it's pissing down in a way.
It is.
You're dark, mate. You are dark. You've got that faint blue glow that looks like there are cloud cover outside.
Oh, it's disgusting. For a holiday, it's really crazy outside. You know, this one has been picked on the show, I believe, but just in case, it's right now, because of Black Friday sales, you can actually pick up a 7-inch Fire tablet for $35.
Now, Let me ask you this question, Doc, because this was this. We had Amber MacArthur on the Big Show 2-3 years ago, and they announced the $35 Indian tablet. And she said, "Well, that's all very well. You use it and play with it, and you buy with it. But what are you going to do after you've finished with it?"
All right. So what I'm going to help you because
good.
I get that's the sentiment because for all intents and purposes, for tablet-y type stuff, you might consider this a low-end, low-brow tablet, and it's kind of weak, right? But let me say that this particular tablet can run the pants off of Plex and Kodi. You can literally run Kodi native on it. You can run Plex native on it. So it's a great, like, everybody's watching something in a room, and I need someplace to watch something by my damn self. It's great for that. With a little tripod mount, which you can pick up for, like, $4, you can set it in the... On a landscape mode, you can set it up and have it either as a rolling script. There's a bunch of apps that will allow you to use it as a teleprompter. From a photo position standpoint, it's great as a teleprompter. It's great as a I'm watching something while I'm working kind of thing. And what I primarily use it for is you were speaking of Screencast Online. I am a big fan of Don. I'm a big fan of Skillshare and a big fan of the Linda. So I have the videos running on this guy. And that way my computer screen is apt to do what I'm supposed to be doing instead of having to do the stop and pause kind of thing. I can kind of work along with the exercises as it plays on there. So nothing more than just a player thing. It's worth it. $35, dude.
I mean, yes.
And it's Amazon. Mm-hmm. You're not buying, Joe's tablet, from the black jacket in the alleyway. This is a real Amazon thing. It's engineered by Amazon and... again, great now, for the kids. You can get them learn the programming, whatever.
To be fair, it does say customize and add to cart. So what's the customizations available here?
If you want to get rid of the little adverts that pop here and there, I believe there is a, I think it's like $10 or $20
premium
one time to stop it. But the ads are so manini, they don't even bother you. Because I have an ad-supported Kindle that I bought on Black Friday a few years back. The ads don't bother me whatsoever. Because once you start reading, you're reading. It's not like it stops you in the middle of reading and shows you an ad. It's only when you first go in, there's a little ad. And 9 times out of 10, I buy what they show me anyway, because it's on Amazon.
It looks good. It looks really good.
I mean, if you want to go a little higher, it's an older model, but the Fire HD 6, smaller screen, little bit better specs. I mean, by little bit, I mean really tiny bit better specs. It's about $30 more. But I think the 7 is the best bang for the buck because at $35, you get the newest OS. You got 8 gigs of internal storage. Unlike my favorite iTablets, you can actually plug in a 128 gig chip to make it bigger if you happen to have one. Whereas my iThing, you're stuck with whatever I puts inside of it. So I don't know. I think for what it's worth for $35, yeah, it's right there with Raspberry Pi. You kind of get it just so you can play with it.
Is it available in the UK?
Yes. Has been since day uno.
Yeah, still $49.99 though.
Yeah.
And you guys don't get Black Friday sale?
No. See, I've just tried to buy it and it's not available at that price.
Oh my god.
Your order.
No, at the $50 though, I mean still it's super cheap. For what you're going to use it for.
Yeah.
No. And if you don't like it, send it right back. It's Amazon.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's totally fine. But it's not quite the same.
Oh,
it's Thanksgiving, so you should be able to pick something that's pure American.
Well, no, I thought you guys had Black Friday sales. You said yeah. So
well, we do, but Black Friday sales and Black Friday sales are clearly different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you know what you do?
I was saying, exchange rate.
Put an alert on so that when the Boxing Day sale come, it'll probably hit the same price because they're on it. They're trying to get these things in everyone's hands because mostly all it's going to do is make you subscribe to Prime Video, which is where they get their money. So, put an alert and says when it hits 35 equivalent, whatever it is for you guys, £18, then buy one.
So the things you got to understand, Doc, as well, like Chris is in Yorkshire.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now Yorkshire is like the Texas of the UK. It believes it's independent, but it really isn't.
Well, they make pudding.
They get they get amazon.co.yk, not UK.
Shut up. Are you joking?
Yeah, I'm joking. Jesus Christ, dude.
I got
me a big one here. Chris, have you got a cool thing, dude?
Yeah, I've got a couple of quick things, so I'm going to keep them quick. So the first one that I've just dropped in there is it's an Anker Bluetooth rechargeable keyboard, $13.99 on Prime. So this is pretty much the same size as the standard Apple keyboard. I wanted a keyboard to use with my iPad on my desk at work, aside of my work PC. Didn't want to blow a lot on it in case it could walk about at work, but found this. So nice key touches on there. 6 month battery charge it advertises. I'm not quite bought into that. That's running on an average 2 hours a day, it says on Amazon. I've charged it about once a month as I'm sort of tottering around on there on the day. But for the price, nice build quality, charges well and pretty responsive. I didn't want a keyboard that was attached to a case. I wanted something that I could just leave in place and walk away from at the end of the day. And at $13.99, I think it's a great price for it. I think I can make great products, and this performs.
What's the connectivity like? I mean, does it drop out occasionally, or is it pretty solid?
I've not noticed any dropouts, so I'm going to say it's pretty solid.
Yeah, no, I've got the Anker multiple charger, the 5-point USB, and it's absolutely superb. And it's small as well, which is quite nice. It's compact. So Anker do make great products, as far as my experience is concerned. $13.99, Jesus.
Cheap.
Chris, with the Bluetooth button that's over there on the Z, does that mean you can connect it to more than one Bluetooth thing?
No, it seems to be one connection at a time.
No, but this is even great for running, again, the Fire TV, Fire TV Stick, yeah, tablet, yeah, absolutely. Apple TV, all of the above.
Chuck it on the living room table. Great stuff.
Righty's put in the chat room that Chris's Amazon login is amazon.e.buy.gum.
True. And really, really quickly, my second.
He picks another.
Yeah, I'm picking a really quick one. It's jumping on your comments. If you're a Mac user and you don't have certain things, then you're an idiot. Don has got a Screencast Online Black Friday deal out at the moment with a coupon code of BF2015, and it's $50 for a 12-month subscription.
If you're a Mac
user, it's available to existing customers as well as new customers. So.
Yeah, if you're a Mac user and you don't subscribe to Don's channel, the Screencast Online, it's stupidity beyond belief.
Yes, I agree.
Because there's so many things that are Mac-focused that Don deals with. And some of them are paid, but some of them are just Don being a good guy. And he gives away one show every month as well. So, I mean, even free, you can get tons of stuff. So
what Don's managed to sort out here, if you're an existing subscriber and you're halfway through your subscription at the moment, doesn't matter. You go on there, you subscribe, you use the coupon code. For your $50, you get your 12 months. Then whatever you're currently through, so if you've got 6 months left on your current subscription, that then just jumps onto the end of the 12 months that you're jumping in on now. So you're not going to lose out, but you're going to get 30% off of the usual subscription price if you're not doing it, you really should.
Yeah, and you're breaking up again, Chris.
I think the missus is down.
Stop downloading. The
missus is Netflix.
Yeah, right. Batwing says in the chat room, what does Texas mean? I was on a flight years ago to the States, flying into Detroit, and the people are going around with the cars, the stewardesses are going around with the cars going, are you an American citizen? And they get to this guy and they go, are you an American citizen? He goes, hell no, I'm from Texas. Texas believes it's completely independent from the rest of the US, and so does Yorkshire think it's completely independent.
God's own country, Yorkshire.
Exactly. You see, that statement sums it up entirely. No question. Righty boy, give us your cool thing.
Something for your morning motion, mate. I know you enjoy those, don't you?
Something for the morning motion.
Yes.
This looks decidedly Commodore 64.
It does. It's called a GoGo Commander Video, and it's unashamedly, if I can get it to work.
Atari.
It's absolutely Atari. And it's kind of like addictive, like Flappy Birds. Addictive, but it's a like constant scroller. And a little fella, he just jumps around. You want to collect the gold. And it looks ridiculous. It sounds ridiculous. But if you're a bit nostalgic like I am, it just feels like one of the old games that you used to play. The only complaint I do have about it is it's free. There's no in-app purchases, but they do shove adverts after every time you die. But if you're good, you'll never see the adverts. So get on the pan and practice, and you'll be brilliant.
In response to your pick, the chat room has gone, Yorkshire pudding is the food of the gods, which... It is, actually. I've got to say, Yorkshire pudding is my favourite. Mm. And the one thing, I'd forget your pick this week, Wrighty. I want to talk to you about ROP.
Yes, oh, sorry. Do I need to apologise?
Yeah, I want to say, you bastard. Because I have been sat on the toilet this week playing ROP, and my legs have got numb.
It's good, isn't it? It's good.
Mate, I made a note of the time. I actually stopped there and pulled up a piece of paper ready to make a note of the time that I swore at Ricey for being a twat for picking ROP.
What level are you on?
I don't know. There's like shapes and I'm sitting there going, what? I'm a dyslexic, for Christ's sake. It's the worst game you can pick in your life for a dyslexic.
My pleasure, mate. My pleasure.
Yeah, I love you. you know when we have the next bash?
Yeah.
Yeah. The bash is the 23rd of July, by the way, if anyone's interested. But if you were interested, at the front, there's a set of bins, right? Like the big flip-up top bins like you get at the side of the building, you know, for industrial waste. Wrighty will be lying bleeding behind those because he picked ROP the other week. Bastard.
Love you too, mate.
My cool thing, and actually, I've been avoiding kind of picking the iPad Pro, and the reason I've avoided picking the iPad Pro is it's kind of like it's a bit cliched and it's an Apple thing, and I should pick it on the Mac show, I shouldn't pick it on the Big Show. And actually, the iPad Pro, I haven't put it down in 2 weeks since I've owned it. Every single day, I've used it for something. I took it to a meeting and I hand-wrote some notes as opposed to sitting trying to type in them. And there's a difference. If you go in a meeting and you're sitting there scrolling on a pad in what's clearly text that you've written, no one cares. But if you put a screen up and you sit and start typing, they go, are you not paying attention to me or something? And it's a massive difference between the two. But the reason that I really want to pick this is because of the fact that I love drawing, but I'm shit at it. I am absolutely useless at drawing. I cannot draw stabilized. I can sketch stuff and can copy stuff, but I can't get what's in my head out onto the page. But what I've done in the last few weeks is take my love of sketching and looked at pictures and reproduced them and sketched them out on the iPad Pro. And then I've started filling them in with various drawing apps. The Adobe application, Adobe Sketch, is just unbelievable. But my pick of the bunch is Procreate. And that's my pick tonight, is Procreate. It is a sketch and paint creation application that goes on the iPad Pro. It's optimized for iPad Pro, so if you've got the pencil, I would say of all of the drawing applications, it's the must-have app. And the reason is when I used to like painting in watercolors an awful lot, and I'm not particularly good, but I used to enjoy it, but I would always make sure that I'd put a lot of color on very much with a dry brush. And one of the things that's really nice in Procreate is the ability to create different types of brushes. Yeah. And you see, well, okay, I haven't got an iPad Pro, I haven't got a pencil from Apple, so why would I want to buy this? It doesn't matter. You still get the same versatility and ability using your own finger doing it, or using your existing stylus that you've got. Yeah. Procreate is by far as I'm concerned, the best drawing application that's out there at the moment. Big drawback is you're limited on pixel size. It's not vector-based. And that's the one thing that, that really disappoints me about the iPad Pro, is that there's hardly anything out there that's, or if anything at all, that is vector-based that goes on the iPad Pro. Brushes used to be vector-based. So you would sit and zoom in and zoom in and zoom in and zoom in, and it didn't matter how much you zoomed in, you would keep detail. There's an awful lot of applications that aren't like that on the iPad Pro, but I love the iPad Pro, and Procreate is my choice, most definitely.
Ewan, do you have a Creative Cloud account?
I do.
Adobe Illustrator Draw is vector-based on the iPad, and it is sick. Even on the crappy iPads, it's sick. It's amazing.
So Adobe Sketch is not vector-based, but Adobe Illustrator Draw
is. Yes.
Okay.
And what's dope, another cool thing, like after I've switched to Creative Cloud, all of the Adobe stuff for the iPad and the iPhone are amazing. But they went all out when the iPad Pro came out. They adjusted a whole bunch of apps to work hand in hand with things like the pen and the jot stylus and, you know, the Wacom stylus and whatnot. And maybe hands down the best application, even like you say, I'm not a great drawer, but I'm really good in Adobe Illustrator, right? So what I do is I hand pencil out a sketch with a black Sharpie onto a piece of paper. Then I open up an application on my iPhone or my iPad called Adobe Shape. I take a picture of it. And as soon as I put the phone on the table, I sit at the computer. It's already in the computer, already traced to vector. Like, I don't have to press any more buttons. It's there, right? So now I can go in with my vector tools, and I can fix my crappy drawing to make it look like something elegant. And if you look at my Instagram channel, you will see I recently did a water bottle engraved with a samurai. That was a photograph of a stamp from Japan taken with my phone, run through Adobe Shape, and then cleaned up in Illustrator over a couple bottles of whiskey. And then now it's a sexy looking vector. But Shape in some of those things like that, especially if you have an iPad Pro, you'll just love it. You just take photos of things black and white or whatever, and you can bring them straight into Illustrator and go to town.
Excellent, mate. Superb choice. Like that. I'll give that a go, because the Adobe stuff, I mean, there's a question straight away here from Deepan. Adobe stuff isn't vector-based. And if you go for the Sketch app, it is not vector-based. It most definitely is not. It pixelates horribly quickly. So I will check that out, mate. Thank you. Though I have to say, the one thing that really attracts me to Procreate is not, because it's not vector-based, but the one thing that attracts me to Procreate is that variance of the brush styles. It makes it far easier to paint. One of the things that I'm really good at is I'm good at sketching. So I can copy a sketch and I can get things to look nice. But then when I start to fill in colour, I find it really difficult if it's not if the paint doesn't go on the way I feel it should go on. And that's where I really struggle. Is that everybody?
Yep.
You think so? Okay, I just tweeted out to Don that he's the cool thing this week. Superb. Where can we get a hold of you, Doc?
You can find me here on the British Tech Network a couple times a week, hanging out with this lot, and anywhere on the internet under DOC@ROCK. And happy Thanksgiving to any other Yanks that are listening to this show.
So you're now going to get stuffed with non-turkey?
Yeah, mostly whiskey.
Okay.
I don't eat food.
Are you going to be awake at 4 o'clock in the morning for the Max show?
Yeah, I'll be still awake.
Good. You're doing a through.
Yeah, I'll stay properly inebriated, and depending on who's baking the brownies, I can't vouch for what's in there.
I used to go. Oh, steady on! Don't say that. I used to go. I used to go on the Computer America show with Carrie Holtzman. That's where I know Carrie from. And a couple of nights, Sarah and Wrighty and Kyle talked me into staying awake all night before I went on the show, and it was awful. It was bloody stupidest thing I've ever done in my entire life. So I hope you're compos mentis tomorrow, mate.
Don't worry, I'm in.
Next, there. Where are you, Chris, Chunky Boy? Because your wife's Chunky downloading the porn.
I'll check that out.
Dude, you look like you're in Minecraft. There's no point in talking because no one can understand a sodding word you're saying. You're at Chris, you're at Campion UK on Twitter, yes? Just yes, nod. Nod in 8-bit. There we go. And people can get a hold with you on Twitter or they can go bollocks. Correct? There we go. That's a classic Yorkshire response. Yep. A nod and a thumbs up. And if you're in Yorkshire, don't look Chris Campion up. Go to near Tadcaster and go to the village of Rhyther and go to the Rhyther Arms, the Palace of Neat, because it is unbelievable. I'm due a trip to York soon, so I will be going to the Rhyther Arms to eat steak because it is the Palace of Neat. Oh, my God. And I know the owner, Tony. So if you want to get a booking, you're better off calling me than you are calling Tony when he's missus. I promise you. Chris, do you want to go?
Can you hear me? Am I back?
Oh, you're back. Yeah. You're not on shit of vision. How good. Close are you to the Rhyther Arms?
I've been to the Rhyther. It's amazing. Give me a shout when you're up.
How close are you to the Rhyther Arms?
About 35 minutes.
35 minutes. There we go. So there's the Rhyther Arms. Ian Grant, me, and Chris Campion eating enough steak to feed a family of four for 2 weeks in one sitting.
Yeah, amazing.
And Righty, where are you, mate?
Oh, as always, at Paulums on Twitter, and always, BritishHitNetwork.com.
Excellent, mate. Thank you. And Light will be up next week or not?
Yes, definitely. 100%.
1,000,000%. You're sounding more positive than your electrical knowledge will give you credit for there.
Yeah, Gav. No worries.
Okay, fair enough, mate. Well done. My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. I've got this horrible feeling like I've forgotten something, but we'll figure it out. Tomorrow, we've got the Max Show at 4 a.m. Hawaiian time. If you're not in Hawaii, then don't worry. It's 10 a.m. Eastern Standard, and it's 3 p.m. UK time. Andy Anacco's on tomorrow, so it should be a good chat about the pencil, because he's a bit of a prolific drawer as well. See you next week.